This month, South Africa becomes a meeting point for faith, dialogue, and deep learning. First, from the 10th to the 14th of August, which is next week, Cape Town hosts the G20 Interfaith Summit, where global religious leaders gather to tackle some of the world's toughest challenges, from inequality to conflict and climate change. Among them is Rabbi Dr. Aharon Ariel Lavie, a respected educator, thinker, and social innovator known for bridging Torah values with real-world impact. And then just days later, he'll be speaking at Limud South Africa in both Cape Town and Johannesburg. A reminder of those Limud dates, the 17th to the 18th of August in Johannesburg, and the Limud website, limud.org.za. Rabbi Dr. Aharon Ariel Lavie, the Managing Director of the Or Torah Interfaith Center, thank you so much for joining us on the Home Run. What are you hoping to contribute at the G20 Interfaith Summit, and what drew you to it?
Hello, nice to be here again. We hope to achieve is actually to signal to the world that religion can be part of the solution, not only part of the problem, because many people view, and sadly, rightfully so, religion as part of the problem, as something that drives extremism and violence and polarization. And we believe that religion has also the power to do exactly the opposite, and actually there will not be a solution without going through the religious aspect, especially not in the Middle East. So we're going to speak about it in several sessions, and also sign a declaration with our Muslim partners, which is going to be the main event for us.
This year's G20 summit focuses on vulnerable communities. Rabbi, what role do you think faith leaders should play in responding to global injustice?
Well, global injustice is a very big issue, and a lot of it stems from, I would say, the fragmentation of society and actually the falling apart of different structures that used to keep us together as a society. Once those structures, as communities, as families, networks of communities, when they fall apart, then people are pretty much left to their own device. If they're strong, they'll succeed. If they're not strong enough or not lucky enough, or they didn't succeed to be at the right time, the right place, they will just fall behind. And especially now with the technological advancement increasing, the gaps also increase rapidly. So I think that the role of faith leaders is actually to rebuild those structures. We cannot roll back technology. I don't think we even need to. I think we need to find what's good about it and promote it. We cannot fight global forces. We cannot impose equality that was tried in the previous century and failed. What we can and should do is rebuild the social fabric, the social structures, such as families and communities, and connect them. And when people are connected, they help each other and they alleviate injustice by the virtue of mutual support and mutual understanding.
You've worked across faiths and cultures. What makes interfaith dialogue so powerful, especially in divided times?
Well, we actually use the term interfaith diplomacy more than interfaith dialogue. And what makes it so powerful is that it touches on the world of ideas. And, you know, there was a famous saying in the 1940s, also which lingered to the 1980s in the U.S., that said, ideas have consequences. And we said that if ideas have consequences, then religious ideas have even more consequences. So interfaith diplomacy is about harnessing, identifying and then harnessing the intellectual assets, the ideas of each faith. In our case, it's primarily Judaism and Islam, but also Christianity and Hinduism and Buddhism and other religions. So you need to identify the intellectual assets and ideas that can actually promote stability and peace and reconciliation, and then amplify them and put the emphasis on them. So that's what interfaith diplomacy does. It tackles the world of ideas and identifies the ideas that can promote a more stable world, and amplify them, bring it to the forefront through education, through conversations, through conferences like the G20 Interfaith Summit that we're going to be next week, such as Limud, which is another good platform to actually promote those ideas. So that's basically what interfaith diplomacy does, and that's why it's so powerful, because it touches on the core of human activities, which is ideas.
talking about Limud, why are you excited to be part of Limud South Africa? And of course, I'm assuming you are.
Yeah. Oh, well, I am excited. You cannot see it on the phone. But if you come to Limud, and I encourage you to come to Limud, we can meet and share the excitement together. You know, the Jewish people hasn't had a state or country for 2,000 years. We haven't had an army. We haven't had an economy. We haven't had power for a long time. What we did have and lingered throughout the ages is communities and learning together. So you can learn online. You can go. Trust me, you can find on YouTube far more rich and diverse and professional lecturers than you can find on Limud. Because you have the top-notch lecturers on YouTube and Facebook and TikTok. But it's not the same. When you come to Limud, you meet people. You learn together. You have a conversation. You have a connection. And I think that's the most exciting part. It's not about information. Information you can get on ChatGPT. Information you can get on so many other places. It's about the connection and connecting around ideas. And not just around having... We are going to have fun together as well. But not just around having fun. It's about ideas, identity, and a sense of belonging, a sense of meaning. And I think that's why Limud conferences, I've been to many Limud conferences. I also have been to Limud South Africa 3 years ago. That will be my second time. Limud is one of the best platforms that Jewish people has to actually amplify this learning together and this community building over time.
What themes will your talks explore at this year's Limud, and how do those themes connect with your broader work?
Well, I'm going to focus actually on the work I do on a regular basis, which is the interfaith diplomacy. So I'm going to give a few sessions about that together with my colleague, Rav Yaakov Nagen. So we're going to explain, give an insider's look of what's going on the ground in Israel. By the way, I live on the Gaza border, so I'm going to share our experience from October 7th. And you know, just yesterday, I met sheikhs from Syria, from Iraq, from people from Gaza. I meet those people all the time. I'm going to give those who come to our session like an insider's look on what's going on. Actually, the kind of stuff you cannot find on YouTube. That's another advantage. You're going to hear firsthand experiences that are not published for a good reason, because we don't want to put anyone at risk. And there's information we cannot expose publicly, but we can expose it at Limud. So that will be my main focus. I'm going to have a few more sessions that revolve around dilemmas of Jewish leaders. I'm going to lead a panel on that issue. Of rabbis, of how to make halakha in the modern era, and some things around Jewish economic thought, which is another field of expertise. But that's pretty much what we're going to deal with this Limud.
Pardon. Rabbi Limud brings together Jews from across the spectrum. How do we learn from that diversity without losing depth or direction?
Well, that's a very good question. I think that the key to benefit from diversity and not going into conflict is to A, assume the other person, even if he or she lives a different lifestyle or leads a different practice in Jewish life, their intention is good. They're not here to destroy the Jewish people. They're here to build it the way they understand, according to their upbringing and education and personal background. And I think the other thing is, which is the flip side, is don't assume or don't even try to proselytize. Don't come to Limud or to those kind of gatherings hoping that someone in the room will walk out Orthodox or Reform or Conservative or non-denominational or whatever you like. You're here to share your views. Hopefully people will like them. You're also here to hear other people's views. And that's the way conversation happens. I think at least in the context of Limud, that's the best bet. That should be your best mindset to come with.
You're known for making Torah speak to modern life. How do you balance tradition with contemporary relevance?
Well, there is a gap. As I mentioned earlier, we as the Jewish people haven't had a country or a state for 2,000 years. And now we're like relearning how to walk, how to have a Ministry of Finance, and how to have an army, and how to have all those governmental agencies and structures. I think we do a very good job on some aspects. We have a lot to improve on other aspects. And I think the key to connect Torah ideas with contemporary life is to use them as a source of inspiration and not necessarily as a source of, let's say, concrete instruction. Depends on the context. So if it's a Shabbat or Kashrut, then we have a tradition about that. I believe we need to keep Shabbat and Kashrut the way we did for a long time. But when we're talking about how to manage the economy, how to manage the army, how to manage the environment, then we can use ideas such as Shemitah, such as the tithes and the charity mechanisms in Judaism. But we need to adapt them. We cannot copy-paste from a farmer's society 2,000 years ago to a hyper-modern AI society in 2025. Just to give you one example, one of the commandments we have in the Torah is to, when you have a field, you need to leave the edge of the field to the poor people so they can come and glean it and take it for their own substance, which is a form of charity that respects the poor people. So you don't give them charity. They actually invest their own labor, and they come and take part of the field and use it, they harvest, and they do all the work. Now, in the ancient world, this was a genius and amazing mechanism to both smaller, like narrow the injustice, but also keep the dignity of the poor people intact. But today, it's irrelevant, because if I have a field here on the Gaza border, and I leave a part of it for the poor people, no one is going to come. No poor person is going to take the schlep from the city to the field to glean some wheat or some dates or some grapes. It's irrelevant. So I need to take the idea of keeping the dignity of the poor people plus managing the injustice or trying to keep it under control and translate that into a modern economy. So for example, it will be maybe instead of giving someone cash, maybe I can give him a job. Maybe I can give him a loan. Maybe I can give him mentoring on how to open a business so they can stand on their own feet. Maybe I can, if I give charity, maybe I should give it in a hidden way, so I won't embarrass and won't, shy anyone away, like no shaming. So that's one basic idea of how you need to translate, you need to understand the core idea and then translate that to the modern economy and not just say, oh, I'm given the edge of the field in 2025, so I'm okay. No, you're not okay, because that's not the idea. It's relevant today.
Rabbi, it's certainly going to be fascinating to hear you at Limud, and we look forward to hosting you, Rabbi Dr. Aharon Ariel Lavi, bringing Torah, insight, and dialogue to two of South Africa's biggest gatherings this August, the G20 Interfaith Summit next week, and Limud, South Africa, from the 17th to the 18th. Rabbi, thanks so much for joining us as always.